Welcome to Book Bistro, where book enthusiasts come to chat about the books they love in a warm and supportive environment. Today is Sunday, February 25th, 2024. This is Shannon, and today I have Robin with me, and we are going to chat a little bit about being intentional about what you read and reading more diversely, like sort of building that in to your sort of way of reading, if that's something that you're interested in doing. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Book Bistro Podcast. There we have our usual Facebook page where we keep track of our Wednesday reads and also post information about the Friday episodes. We also have a Facebook listener group that you're welcome to join. And if you prefer a different type of listener group, you can contact us and ask about our WhatsApp group. Both groups are pretty small, not super high traffic, and we would love to have you. If you want to get in touch with us off of social media, you can do so by sending an email to thebookbistropodcast@gmail.com. If you're looking for our main hosting page, where you can find information on the podcatchers that make Book Bistro available to you, you can find that information in our show notes. As I said to Robin before we started recording, I've heard a lot of people say that they don't pay attention to the authors of what they read. They just, you know, pick a book, it calls to them in some way, they read it, and they don't necessarily know a lot about the person or people who write those books. And I think especially in the current climate, I do think it's important to know something about the people who are creating art, and to understand perhaps, you know, what goes into that creative process for some people. You know, historically, marginalized authors have had a really hard time getting books published. And even when they are published, they don't always sell well, partly because they are not given the publicity that other books are. And so I think by being intentional about what we read and by paying attention to those authors, we can, even in a small way, help to give those books and those voices more notoriety. So that's what we are here to talk about. So, do you remember, Robin, when you sort of started to pay attention to the authors that you were reading and to actually like choose books by certain authors? Maybe because they fell into marginalized groups.
I would say I started being intentional about it about 15 years ago. It was a gradual process. I think it started with finding a particular author and then really loving that author's work and continuing to read their backlist and look for their new releases. And then as I became more aware, more conscious, and a little more involved with what was happening online, then it just expanded from there. Or I would read an author that the author I liked had mentioned.
Yes.
So I kind of fell into it, I think. For example, of two authors that I started reading, Louise Erdrich and Walter Mosley, both of them I discovered because I think actually both of them were recommended to me by my spouse. He had read a book by Erdrich that he just thought was absolutely amazing. And I read it and fell in love with her work. I've read several of her books since then, and I'm always looking for her new releases. And then one day I was asking my spouse for a particular type of book, and he said, "Well, I just read a Walter Mosley novel that would fit the bill." And so I discovered Mosley and have read, I'd say, three quarters of his backlist and every new release. So yeah, it's been a gradual process over the last 15 years.
So I know, like, my first sort of, I don't want to say exposure, but sort of conscious awareness of reading books by people who, and I'm going to start with people who aren't white, was when I was in undergrad. I took a Voices in American Pluralism class, and through that class, I was introduced to a lot of authors that I hadn't, necessarily known about, or if I'd heard of them, like I hadn't read them. And although I tend not to be like a huge fan of kind of what we term like classic literature, I did gain an appreciation for the writing of some of these people. Especially Julia Alvarez. I have read several of her books, and In the Time of the Butterflies remains one of my very, very favorite books. And I read that, in the first, gosh, I was probably a sophomore in college, maybe. So right around, 2000. But I think also it has a lot to do with like what you read. I was primarily a romance reader for a long time with like some forays into like mystery, fantasy, things like that. But especially romance wasn't very diverse for, quite a while. And still, I wouldn't say, is as diverse as it could be. And so if you're reading primarily like genre fiction, I think you don't always find some of those diverse authors.
So you're reminding me of a few things. So I answered your last question based on my own intentionality.
Yes.
But I was exposed to a lot of diverse literature in my undergraduate degree. I did a women's studies degree. I had a professor who exposed us to a lot of First Nations and Indigenous work by
Ah,
people
yes.
that are still not, were never terribly well known. So, I mean, I could mention names to you, Ruby Slipperjack, Leslie Marmon Silko, Louise Haff, people who were writing poetry and essays and novels of various kinds, but were not in mainstream consciousness. And then I was also exposed in kind of the more feminist theory type classes. We would read bell hooks, Audre Lorde. Both of, or at least Audre Lorde, wrote fiction as well as nonfiction.
Yes.
And also a lot of queer literature, which at the time was still really off. Oh, my brain isn't coming up with the right word. Off the beaten path is not what I was looking for, but not in the public consciousness of what
Right,
to read.
far kind of outside of that, I think. I
Yeah.
remember looking for queer literature.
And it was there.
It was,
It
but
was,
A, it's hard
but
to find in an accessible format.
yes.
And if you find it in an inaccessible format, like making it accessible, wasn't always the easiest.
Oh yeah, this was 2000, 2001, and I read one of Shani Mutu's first novels, and by that point Mutu was living in Canada, which I think is why I was able to have it, the book, in an accessible format, because one of
Ah.
the libraries For the Blind recorded a lot of Canadian authors, or authors living in Canada, I should say, because I don't remember what Mutu identifies as, but I would say probably Caribbean Canadian.
Okay.
Something in that line. I meant to look up her bio before I started this, and I didn't. So that was my first exposure. It didn't necessarily make me seek out other work, but
Right,
it
I would
did
agree with
broaden
that.
my horizons and did make me more conscious, even if it took time for that consciousness to percolate. Plus, as
Yes.
you say, the diversity factor. You know, I moved to the US in 2004, where there was a lot more contemporary work available in alternative formats than there had been in Canada, where I lived. And I spent a lot of time catching up on books that my mom was reading in the 80s and 90s that I would hear her talk about. So I had to catch up on Jonathan Kellerman and Faye
Yes.
Kellerman and Sue Grafton. And there were probably some others that I remember binging series to catch up
Right, because they hadn't
on
been
these
available.
books that were alive in my awareness. And then some other books that would seem like they were more diverse, but weren't really. I read The Power of One by Bryce Courtney, which is ostensibly about life in apartheid South Africa,
Yes.
but it is written by a white man who moved to Australia very early in his life. And I'm not going to say he doesn't know what he's talking about, but there is also just a point of view that one must be aware of. And
Yes.
I'm mentioning that book because it was one of the early books in my kind of let me catch up to all the books, because I grew up in a book-loving household. My mother loves to read, always read to me. And actually, I'll just say really quickly, and then we can get back to kind of more contemporary stuff. You know, the only diversity I remember about my reading as a child was reading Jean Little,
Yes,
who was
Jean Little.
blind and who wrote about children with many kinds of disabilities.
Yes, I think, and I'm trying to remember if, like, at the time, even as a child, I remember thinking, like, books like hers were so rare. A, because they featured disabled characters, and B, because they weren't cured at the end.
Yes,
Or they
yes,
didn't die.
yes. They didn't die and they weren't cured. Maybe they got some help that made life a
Right.
little easier for them, got crutches or braces or were taught Braille or something, but
Yes, they were
they
finally
weren't
able
fixed.
to, right, they were able to, I think, in a lot of ways, like incorporate their disability into part of their identity in a way that, like, maybe they didn't at the beginning of the book.
And that gave them
And
confidence to interact with their family,
yes.
their non-disabled peers. And she was writing as somebody who had been a low vision child
Right, and then went on to be a teacher of
of
kids
disabled children.
with multiple disabilities. Like, she knew, even if not, living with all of these disabilities that she wrote about, but she had a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience that she was able to tell stories that felt, very authentic to the disabled experience.
But it's not just the technical details of what you experience as a disabled child, but it's the emotions,
Yes,
the
always.
confusion, the hope, the wishes. And having read her memoirs, I know that she experienced that as a child. Like the confusion of, well, why can't I do the things that other kids are doing?
Right. I remember her
Why?
talking about, sometimes when she would feel like, maybe people weren't paying as much attention to her as she sort of, thought they should, that she would like stumble over a crack in the sidewalk or like walk into something, even though she could see, well enough in those instances to, not have done that.
The
But I just
uncomfortable
remember
reality
thinking,
of, yeah.
yes. And I just remember thinking, like, that's a part of being a person with a disability that maybe, like, you wouldn't realize if you
Being
weren't.
a child and not being this angelic
Right.
creature.
Yes. And so I think that kind of, reading her books as a young person, I think is the first thing that really made me super aware that, like, not, I don't want to say I didn't know that not everybody wrote like that, because obviously I did. But I think reading things that did disability right made me more aware of, like, all the things that didn't.
It highlights the differences. And
Yes.
then you see some of these popular authors putting more, quote unquote, diversity in their books and not necessarily doing it very well
Right.
because it's not part of their lives. And being kind of awkward about it. I can't really think of a good example of that now, but I know I kind of strayed off our conversation by bringing up childhood, but
Well, but I think that does kind of like lead into it, because it shows, I think, that even as kids, like, people are aware, people that aren't represented in the mainstream very often or very well, I think are aware of that from a young age and know that they don't see people in books or on TV whose life experiences, look like theirs.
And also to think about how we were blind children. So, of course, we were introduced to Jean Little's books. How
Yes.
many non-disabled children were automatically introduced to Jean Little's books?
Right. I would suppose not very many.
I mean, I would imagine that they read them, otherwise, she wouldn't have been able to get more publishing deals.
Right.
But as an automatic, oh, this is what we're going to give you.
Right.
I don't, yeah, it was a different time. I'd love to know if like she was in, recommended book lists and did teachers teach her books? So the other thing that I'm thinking about, like childhood reading, I read the Little House books voraciously.
Oh God, I did too.
Absolutely voraciously. I'm a little embarrassed about it now, but it's fine. And there was a blind character or person in there, Mary, Laura's
Yes.
older sister. So the Little House books were fictionalized accounts of their life. And as an adult, I've read a lot of books that have kind of peeled back the layers, some of which Laura wrote in adulthood and some of which other people have written with research. But something that actually made me really upset was that Mary actually missed a year of school when she went to the school for the blind because she had to have surgery because she had a lot of nerve pain in her face. And it
Yes.
made me really upset that that was totally omitted in the novels.
There wasn't, like, in the later novels, you saw that she was blind, but you never really saw sort of that, like, going from sighted to blind and kind of
No,
what that experience
it was,
was.
we were just told.
Right, you just knew that it happened. But then if you look at like the TV show, that was all in there. But then it's my understanding that, a lot of things that were put in the TV show, like, didn't actually happen
Yeah, I don't know that they necessarily like did the additional research of,
Right.
finding Laura's unpublished autobiography, which is I think where she talked about the nerve surgery. I think it troubles me that we are shown Mary as very serene, and well, she doesn't truly adapt to her blindness until she goes away to school.
Right.
She adapts to it in the way that works for her and the family, and she's very serene, where she probably had headaches.
Oh, I would imagine.
Like, knowing now, like, a little bit more of how it happened, that most
Right.
likely she had a stroke.
Well, and you just like you hear, so much now about what it takes to adapt. To a disability if you aren't born with one. And yet, like, none of that is seen there.
No.
Like, none of the physical stuff, none of the emotional stuff. Like, it just is.
So, it's actually on a different topic. It's actually really frustrating for me because a lot of the kind of less well-known literature that I was exposed to in college is not available in alternate formats.
Gatekeeping.
Because it's
Yes.
old and it's,
Right.
probably some of it's published by small publishers and.
Right. Some of it may not be in print anymore. But I think it is like there's always been sort of that idea that somebody has to decide that a book should be put in a specialized format. And I think that makes intentional reading harder. Like if we think about, back like when we were growing up. Even if I had wanted, if I was more interested in reading diversely as a young adult, like that stuff wouldn't have been available to me. I had to pick my reading based on what was available through, the National Library Service. Slowly, as I got to be a teenager, stuff was being made available commercially, but only, the most like popular things. And the person who read to me as a child, was my paternal grandmother, who was very, very conservative and was not going to read, queer literature had I, wanted her to do that back then. Like that just wasn't going to happen.
So I did actually read a queer author when I was young.
You did?
I did. I remembered this morning. I didn't know it at the time, but I read Tennessee Williams plays. My father recommended Tennessee Williams plays to me. And when I was 11, my 7th grade teacher was horrified. And that's probably a topic for another theme or a discussion for another theme. But yes, I did read, even if I didn't read any of his queerer work, I did
Right.
read a queer author
Very
and
good.
was available in Braille.
That's kind of amazing.
Indeed.
I think we are, a whole lot more fortunate now, and people growing up now have, so much more access to things than we did. A, like YA is so much more diverse now than it was when we were growing up, but it's like the accessibility is so much greater.
It's so much more diverse and just so much more bountiful.
Yes. Yes.
It's really, really beautiful. And let just one more about the kids stuff. Judy Blume did her best.
I'll agree with that.
Within her realm as a white straight lady who was already horrifying parents and teachers by even mentioning sex. She did her best to show that we're not all the same. She did a lot of good stuff with body image. I think in Dingley, where Dingley had to wear a brace, where yes, it's a fairly common thing, not, is it going to be a temporary thing? She wasn't disabled, as it were, but she talks about how it affects her body image and sexuality, wearing this hard brace and wanting to go and just feel her crush, put his arms around her, and not have the heart. It just really does dig deep into some of that stuff that I think as disabled girls we could have related to in a bit of a deeper way. So yes, I think she did her best.
I think she did. I think, you know, there wasn't a market, I feel like, for people to, or at least people thought there wasn't a market for disabled authors, you know, like Jean Little, for example, to write those stories. Judy Blume could do it because she was a best-selling author. And
So well,
so while she, you know, perhaps didn't have those life experiences, she could write books about them and they would sell.
and where she didn't necessarily write about a disabled character, she wrote about a medical conditioning that was disabling and required medical intervention. And that's pretty deep.
And at the time, you know, when Deanie was popular, there just, as we've said, you know, weren't a lot of books like that.
No, there really, really weren't that were just like, okay, this is happening, this is normal. And it sucks.
Right. And you're going to have all kinds of feelings about this, and all those feelings, you know, are okay. It doesn't make you a bad person.
Exactly. And it doesn't make you weird. So I'm remembering something about adult books and the books that become popular. And the books that don't. So I've read a lot of police procedural, kind of mystery, police procedural adjacent, like Patricia Cornwell, forensic pathologist, all of those series that really became popular in the late 80s and continued. There were other people writing the same kinds of books that we never heard about.
It's true.
There was a black woman named Eleanor Taylor Bland, and she wrote 10 police procedural books with a black woman and her white partner, her white police partner. And they are really good. They're really good, and most of them are out of print now.
And so those are going to be books that are going to be hard for people to find. And back
And
when they were being written, I'm guessing they weren't accessible.
they probably were not very common unless you lived in the region where she wrote. And I know that's, normal for a lot of books. There are a lot of regional books that we never hear about. And we maybe don't necessarily need to know about whatever they're writing about. It might be very regional. It might not apply to us. I don't know. But that she was a black writer, I believe she had a chronic illness and was writing books that, while they weren't as off the wall, were every bit as good as Patricia Cornwell books. They were
And I
police, not forensics, but
right. I think it comes down to like what gets marketed. You
It
know, what
does.
gets like the marketing dollars, what are libraries promoting? And in the time, you know, before like the internet, you know, what like your libraries, your like supermarket checkout lines are going to be like the main places that people hear about the next great book they should read. And
Yep.
I'm guessing that her books, you know, weren't there.
I would imagine I just stumbled across some by accident on Bard.
Oh, I'm glad to know they're
And
there.
yep, they're there. The recordings aren't great because they're old,
Sure.
but they are there.
We'll have
I
to look for them.
think a couple of them might have been re-recorded. I'm not sure. Anyway,
We'll have to look for
I
these.
thought they were very good. So should we talk about how we find
Yes.
diverse authors?
Yeah. So I know, like I had said to you, that one of the biggest, like, stumbling blocks that I found when I was first, you know, trying to expand my reading was that as a blind person, I couldn't always tell if, for example, someone was an author of color. And not everybody, you know, has a nifty little bio on their website that says, you know, I am such and such ethnicity.
Right.
Like, you know, not everybody's going to identify, nor should they have to, in order to, you know, sell books. Like, if people choose to, that's awesome. But, you know, we don't have, you know, I don't say I'm a white woman on this podcast. Like, you don't have to self-identify. But as somebody who can't see pictures, I struggled sometimes to know and to actually make the choices to read authors who are not white. And some of the things that I found to help with that are like the Goodreads lists. I would say they're not always 100% accurate, but they give me a good sort of jumping off point if I'm looking for, you know, say mysteries by authors of color. I can usually find a Goodreads list that will, you know, give me some ideas. There's also a database that highlights cozy mysteries by authors of color, as well as cozy mysteries by queer authors. And sometimes, you know, even if cozy mysteries aren't your like preferred genre, you can start there and sort of fall down the rabbit hole of, you know, finding more either authors of color or queer authors, whatever it is, you know, that you're looking to read more of. I have also just asked people, like if I'm in a Facebook, you know, book group, I'll often ask, you know, I'll explain that I'm blind, I can't see pictures. You know, can you tell me, like, is this an author of color? And I know that obviously you can't always tell 100% from a picture, but I figure, you know, people who can see generally, you know, are making these guesses for themselves. And it is kind of a helpful way to know more about, you know, who may have written a book. So those are some of
So,
the things that I've done for authors of color. What about you?
around diverse authors in general, authors of color, queer people, people from other places in the world,
Yes.
even, I remember, so I'm in a reader group on Facebook for fans of KJ Charles. KJ Charles writes mostly male historical romance. She write does a lot of research about queer people and people of color in Regency and Victorian England. And She's a white woman. She's, as far as I know, straight. She's married to a man. She's got kids. She is what she does the work of allyship. She is definitely somebody that I trust when she talks about promoting the works of marginalized authors. She's actively done that. So I asked in her group one day, and something she said really stuck with me. She said, once you get started reading a more diverse collection of authors, it will just take off from there. That eventually you will be able to stop thinking about it because there will be enough authors in your orbit and enough awareness that it just comes. And I have found that. Some specific resources I use are these, include the site LGBTQReads.com.
Yes.
Dahlia Adler is a YA author, and I don't actually know what, if any, marginalized identities she uses, but she does a fantastic job of every month we see the new releases that are relate to queerness, gender identity, sexual identity, et cetera, et cetera. She also will do lists related to Black history, Indigenous authors, queer historical romance, all different kinds of lists that expose you to different authors, many of whom are people of color or queer or disabled or all three or two of those three or some other identity I'm not thinking of. So she's my big resource. And then what I will often do is I will pre-order books by
Yes.
marginalized authors. I had one year where I actually did that for half a year. I started out. I spent a lot of money on books that year inadvertently. But I will do that as a form of support and as a form of, okay, this helps me keep track of my reading for this year.
I will also say that your public library, you know, I will say not all public libraries are going to be created equal, but it is a good place to start because often on their website, they will have sort of guides and lists that change like month to month or sometimes quarter to quarter, and that highlight books that either, you know, work with a certain theme. So, like with February being Black History Month, my library, you know, put out a list of like fiction books by Black authors and nonfiction books by Black authors. And you can find lists like that even in libraries that you know, aren't, like if you don't live where that library is, you can still obviously go to their website and look at their lists. And so definitely, you know, don't discount sort of the power of the public library system.
My library, the Seattle Public Library, does a lot of that. They have lists of the current banned books or books that are being challenged.
Yes.
They are part of the program that makes the online and like ebooks and online services of their library available to young people across the country.
Yes, I love that that's a thing now that some libraries have done.
Yes, there's a handful, and I'm very proud that my library is one of them. I also wanted to circle back to what you were saying about not knowing if an author is a person of color or has some other visual representation of being from a marginalized group. I will actually do research. I will actually go and look up interviews that the author may have
Yes.
done online. And that often gives me the answers. And not that I'm actually searching for, is this author clear?
Oh,
But
right.
I will go and read. For example, I read an author interview today with Gabe Cole Novoa. And I learned that Gabe is trans. I figured that Gabe was probably somewhere in the non-binary, transgender, agender spectrum, but I specifically learned that he is trans and that he used to write under another name, which I did not know. So you can learn a lot from interviews
Yes, you can.
without feeling like a peeking Tom.
Right. Like you're not necess you don't have to necessarily look, like you said, you know, is this a queer author? But by reading those interviews or listening, you know, to podcast interviews, you can, you know, sort of find that out. I have also found that finding people, like you mentioned, being, you know, in a Facebook group for like fans of KJ Charles, I think finding a network of people whose reading tastes align with yours and who you know, also to be sort of diverse readers, I think you can gain a lot of information by, you know, what people around you are reading and
Oh
what they're saying about, you know, what they're reading.
yeah. In that group, people will often come for book recommendations. And sometimes they're looking for books that will support them in their identity or books that are kind of comfort
Yes.
for them, which might mean I want a book with a trans character who doesn't experience transphobia.
Right.
And people in that group are able to help them find it, or able to say, this one pretty much meets what you're saying. There's a little bit at the beginning, but if you can get through that, it's really great from there on
Right.
out.
The rest like smooths out. You're not going to
Right.
find
And
transphobia all throughout this book.
so it's actually really great to see that, and people being aware and people reading books. There are books that I would never have heard of that I have read
Absolutely.
because I'm in that group. And sometimes because they are a genre that I wouldn't normally read. But I'm like, okay, KJ Charles told me this person's a really good writer, and KJ is a really good writer, and I really do want to support this author's work. Yes, because they are marginalized.
Right.
So yeah, definitely finding community is a huge thing, as it is for everything. We need
Yes,
community.
I think we look at sort of the power that communities can have. Like we look at, you know, the way communities of people are banning and challenging books, but different communities are also, you know, working to promote those types of books and are, you know, helping to, you know, keep these books kind of in the forefront of consciousness for people who are looking for them.
And I think that's a lot of what people like Dahlia Adler with LGBTQ Reads, and she's not the only one,
No.
what they are doing with making these lists is making sure we know and we're going to go out and support authors who don't get a lot of support and who get a lot of backlash.
Danielle Clayton, a while ago, was part of the We Need Diverse Books campaign. And I'm not sure that they are still like actively keeping track of new books over there. Like, I
We
haven't
Need
seen a
Diverse
lot.
Books is still active, yes.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Because I have not seen a lot of their stuff kind of being, you know, pushed out into kind of where I'm looking for books.
They work a lot with kids and young adult books, and a lot with kids books, which may be why you're not seeing a lot of it. And I think they may be doing more work behind the scenes, but I am, as of last year, they were still going.
And Danielle Clayton is just like a remarkable author,
I've
in her
never
own
read
right.
her.
Oh, like she's got some like contemporary kind of thriller. She's got a really cool speculative series called The Bells. I think she's delved a little bit into some sci-fi. She just has done a lot of books that like just sort of leap out at you once you start them. I'm just a really big fan of hers, and I love that she was one of the people who were kind of instrumental in getting the "we need diverse books" kind of movement, giving it a lot more notice, getting it going. And I think she's just one of those people that, if you pay attention to things that she's recommending, you're definitely going to find, more diverse reads than you had before.
So you mentioned genre books before, because you read a lot of genre fiction. And while it's still a little harder to find sometimes, there is a lot of genre fiction out now
Yes,
by
now I would
people of
say,
various marginalized identities.
I would say it's better now than it was, even like 10 or 15 years ago. But like when I was first reading like adult,
Oh,
romance,
I know.
like it was very, very white.
It was, and it was leaned into a lot of stereotypes and outright cringy stuff sometimes.
Absolutely. And there's still, some of that. Like it's, I'm certainly not saying that, that's all gone and everything is now, perfectly diverse, because I think we always have more work to do in those areas. But in a lot of genre fiction now, I will agree that it's definitely better than it was. So I think this is a very broad topic that, we could keep talking about for quite a while and still not, come close to answering all the questions or offering all the resources. But since we don't want to make this like a marathon podcast episode, I'm going to mention an author that I find incredibly powerful and that I think more people should know about. And then if you have one, you can mention one, and then we will wrap up. So I am absolutely in love with musical theater. I have talked about it on the podcast before, and this is an author that I've mentioned on the podcast before. Ally Stroker is a disabled woman who is very, very active in the musical theater community. And she has written two books about a young girl who is, I want to say, in like sixth or seventh grade, and how she finds her place in musical theater as a young actress in a wheelchair. And these are some of the most powerful books for their disability representation, their realism, but also just like the sense of hope and optimism that it's just, she's incredible in every way. And whether you have a child with a disability, or you want just to encourage like diverse reading in children, in adults, I think Ally Stroker is a phenomenal author to check out. Her books are, quick reads, if you're an adult, but I never felt like I was reading, something like specifically for kids. I felt very seen, even as, a woman in my 40s. Like it just took me back to some of my own experiences, in the arts as a kid, and I love them for this. So the first book is called The Chance to Fly, and again, it's by Ally Stroker. What about
These
you?
are These are on my list, and I think I've
Oh.
been reading some really heavy books lately, so I think I need to lighten it up. I think I
Oh.
will put this one in the queue.
Yes, you I think you'll really like them. Like there's so many like really cool nods to like the popular, musicals, and just kind of that sense of being a kid that loves musical theater.
So, I recently read a book that kind of defies categorization. It's called Motorcycles and Sweetgrass, and it's by Drew Hayden Taylor. He is a First Nations author. I believe he is Anishinaabe, but I'm not precisely remembering. At any rate, this is a book that is about the trickster. And the trickster has moved into a town and is making trickster chaos. He's wooing the chief of the tribe in this reservation. He is messing with this woman's son, like making him believe things, or not making him believe things, but like leaving pictures on his favorite rock and doing really weird tricksterish things. Meanwhile, the chief, her mother passes away, and but the whole town is worried about land rights and this piece of land that they just acquired. So everybody's approaching her at the funeral just to express their opinion about the land. And then Trickster, I don't even know how to describe it. It's wild, it's zany, it's short, it's a quick read. It is unapologetically Anishinaabe. I don't think it does a lot of explaining for particular words or concepts. As an English speaker, you do know what's happening in the book, but it's not going to be explained to you because you just got to hang on and figure it out. So that is Motorcycles and Sweetgrass by Drew Hayden Taylor. I strongly recommend it for something different in your world, to be honest.
And I think part of, what we're talking about here is not to be afraid or intimidated when you're looking at, reading books by people whose life experiences are not like yours.
Yes, exactly.
So that does it for us today. I want to thank Robin so much for being a part of this with me this afternoon. As always, thanks goes out to Christine for all of her fantastic editing, especially when we have these kind of meandering conversations, that, can get a little tangential sometimes. And of course, as I often say, we wouldn't have a podcast if no one listened to it. So thank you all so much for joining us each week as we talk about great books. If you would like to let us know your thoughts, you can do that by leaving us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or any other platform you use to access the show. And not only does it allow us to see your feedback, but it also helps other book lovers to find us, which is a great thing. So I will be back next Tuesday morning with more bookish fabulousness. And some number of us will be back on Friday with more discussion of great books. Take care, everybody.